Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by LegalZoom. Protect your family with a last will or living trust today. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but can connect you with an independent attorney. Visit LegalZoom.com and use offer code AAA in the referral box at checkout for your special discount. And by 99 Designs. 99 Designs is the entrepreneur's number one choice for high-quality, affordable design. To get the perfect design for your logo, business card, website, app, and more, visit 99designs.com/twit and receive a $99 service upgrade for free. And by PagerDuty. PagerDuty decreases alerting noise for IT operations and developers to ensure that the right engineers are notified at the right time. Increase your uptime and sign up for a 14-day free trial at pagerduty.com/twit. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 228, recorded on Tuesday, August 25th, 2015. We're your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Ron Richards.
The East Coast. It's okay. You'll be fine. You'll be able to get back into San Francisco. You won't get caught up in the Burning Man wall trying to get back into the city.
Yeah. You won't?
Thankfully, it was all a joke. But, yes. I'm surviving the awful, awful heat that is in New York right now. So, which apparently they tell me isn't that awful. I'm just a baby because I live in San Francisco.
West Coaster. sitting next to me here in the studio, welcoming back Miriam Jouar. How you doing,
everybody.
Tank Girl?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You're going to Burning Man.
Yes, if I manage to finally escape the city. I've been meaning to go to Burning Man for a few days now.
Yeah,
really? They don't really need me.
We have you locked into a show, man.
No, I'm happy to be here.
Okay.
It was not you guys, it was my actual consulting business that kept me in town.
Got it.
But as long as I'm there for the event, because that's when I work during the event, I'll be good. So I think I'll be there Thursday or Friday.
Okay.
A couple of days ahead, just, kind of acclimatize before I hit the coffee shop and start managing people.
Before you can effectively forget the world and get lost in Burning Man.
And then I'll never be back.
You're going to have to talk a lot about
phones.
This is
probably the last show you'll see me because, of course, the wall.
The wall will be built and you won't be able to get back in.
No.
It's just reality. It's the way it goes.
Eventually, I'll run out of water.
you could trade for water, I've heard. We're also welcoming back to the show somebody we haven't had on in a really long time. And I'm not entirely sure why, but Kevin Purdy returns to the show. Last time you were on, you were not a staff writer for The Wire Cutter, but you are now. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you back, man. You've been busy. I mean, literally, it's probably been a couple of years since we had you on last time. What has happened here? You're working for The Wire Cutter. What else are you doing?
That's it. It's my full-time gig now. I enjoy it so much when I was freelancing for them that now I'm writing for them and the sister site, the sweethome.com.
Sweethome.com, that's what it is. Yes. That's cool. Yeah, The Wire Cutter, definitely check it out. It's a great... It's kind of a unique approach. I don't know. Maybe it's better if you kind of explain what The Wire Cutter is all about for anyone who hasn't been there.
We test products. We review them. We basically look at categories of things we want to buy and we think most people want to buy. And we take all the instead of making you go through all our reviews, posting things constantly, not that, constantly updating the news about something is a bad idea. Ahem. But we
thank you.
We try to look at the whole category and we try to pretend like, someone's asking us, hey, so what do I get? I don't have, I work as a consultant. I don't have 6 hours to figure out a USB microphone or, a battery backup pack or something like that. And so we ask smart people, we test, we read the reviews and we come up with what we think is the best pick for a lot of different categories.
If you're looking for like the top of a specific category, the wire cutter is perfect for that. By the way, it did not go unnoticed that you said category at the right time. just saying.
Yes, and I'm not currently using the best USB microphone. I just want to point that out for you audio listeners.
Although this is this is a category that you're investigating at this point, right?
Oh, almost certainly, yes.
Well, that's okay. We forgive you. We'll have to have you back. We'll send you a headset mic that we recommend, and you can test that one out too.
You sound great, by the way. It's not bad.
Yeah, it's like we're in the room with you.
And the wire cutter is like one of my favorite places to find out about things that are kind of beyond my range of like, you know, phones I can figure out, laptops, wearables, but like things like what's the best router or what's the best, you know, Bluetooth speaker, that kind of stuff.
Because you go online, if you go on Google and you do a search for that, most of the time you're not going to find the actual answer. You're going to find a bunch of people who have played the game, who are playing the Google search keyword game really effectively. So the wire cutter is kind of a place that you can go to kind of find that answer from people that's exactly what they're looking into. What is the best thing in that category?
And the alternative is like, you know, looking on Amazon and reading all the reviews, but who has time to look at every product and look at every user review? I mean, it's just so intensive. You just want to know which one do I get.
Exactly. Kevin does. Yeah. He has all that time.
For small trash cans, I read more than 750 reviews of small trash cans.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, and yet, you are a patient.
Someone married me.
That is some patience right there. Cool. Well, it's awesome to have you back. We've got a lot to talk about this week. We're going to be discussing the future of Google now, dun dun dun, and whether Microsoft's Cortana can take it on. We've got the OnePlus 2. I've got it in my hot little hands here. Miriam Jouar also has the OnePlus 2. We've been living with it, living with the OnePlus 2 for the last week.
Wait, I need to unlock this thing. There we go.
So we'll talk all about that. Interactive watch faces and, well, just a whole lot more. But before we get to all that other stuff, we got to play this jingle bumper thing.
Jingle bumper?
Yeah, jingle bumper.
This just in, everyone. It's no longer news. It's a jingle bumper. Stay tuned.
I kind of have a t-shirt now that says Jingle Bumper.
I like right that there, Jingle Bumper. There's no way I'll ever confuse it either. I'll know exactly what's coming up.
That, by the way, that is an industry term. That's industry terminology. Jingle bumper.
It's a very technical term, actually. I'm almost worried about it being too much of an insider term. You know, but now it's out there. Everyone knows that they're
sorry. The cat's out of the bag with the jingle bumper. All right. So, Ron, what is there to fear about Google now?
Well, yeah. So coming out of Google I.O., it seemed everything was all rosy. And then we get the Alphabet Google news. And you think that everything's on the up and everything's great. And sure enough, now we're starting to get reports that all is not well in the Googleplex, specifically in around Google Now. Multiple sources told Recode concerning the state of Google Now within the Google's organization. Leading up to this year's I.O. event, key members of the Google I.O. team reportedly left the team due to frustrations that the feature wasn't getting the attention it deserved within the company. At a point when search metrics for cost per click were slowing down, Now was removed from Android and placed into the search team to juice it up. And when Larry Page, who at the time was the Google CEO, a huge proponent of the feature, he peeled away to focus on what's now become Alphabet. Sundar Pichai was put in control of Android, and his priorities were now Chrome and Android. So when members of the Google Now team asked him for more attention and support, apparently Pichai deflected responsibility. So now that Google Now on Tap is coming to Marshmallow, it's kind of embarrassing because Microsoft just beat Google to the punch just this week with a new feature inside of Bing and Bing Search that effectively duplicates the OnTap functionality. It provides web content related to anything that is shown on the screen. So, you know, here's the question now. Google Now is a huge component of the Android ecosystem. We talk about it all the time. Is it innovating as fast as it should? Is losing these key members of the team going to hinder the development of Google Now as a product within Android? I didn't even know that it was moved to the search team. That's a pretty big deal. So is this staff exodus anything we should be worried about?
Yeah, I don't know. How did Kevin, in your estimation, do you feel like progress on Now has slowed down from a feature standpoint? It kind of seemed like Now was going pretty hard. And then, I mean, now obviously we're looking forward to OnTap to come to Marshmallow, the few people that will actually have Marshmallow. But is it progressing at the rate that you kind of expected it would? Or do you think there's anything to worry about here?
I'm less of a Google Now user than I think some enthusiasts are. I just got an email 2 days ago from Wunderlist, the to-do manager, noting that, hey, by the way, now Wunderlist is integrated into Now. So it seemed like app integrations were moving along just fine, and even some early access apps were getting that kind of inroad. But until I saw this story in the rundown, I did not know that it was I didn't know this kind of inside baseball in this about Google Now moving from one department to the other.
Mm-hmm. I can show you real quick here. So Bing Search, Microsoft's Bing Search app, just rolled out this feature, basically. I guess from what I understand, they were working on this before Google unveiled on tap at Google I/O. So I'm not sure if this is necessarily Microsoft saying, hey, that was a really good idea, let's do it. But I can show it off. I actually have it on my phone right now. If you take the screen here. So I've got this this update on Google Plus from somebody that I follow, who actually Dr. Joe's going to be on the show in a couple of weeks. Anyways, so Austin is on the screenshot right there on the image. I drag that over and I swipe it over, and it's able to scan the contents of the screen and give you contextual information based on what it finds. So kind of cool stuff. Now on tap, we'll do the same thing. Basically, you'll do the swipe up from down at the bottom here, which you're used to doing anyways. And from what I understand, or do you hold it down? Anyways, it's one of those actions where you like hold it down for a couple of seconds and it'll actually take a snapshot of your home screen, analyze it, and then give you information that's relevant. So it's a cool feature. I don't know.
I feel like Google Now on Tap was one of the things from the Google I/O presentation that we were most excited about, that we mm-hmm. thought was like a mm-hmm. real innovation. And if the folks behind it have now left because of their frustrations, that's probably got to be a pretty big deal. If the key engineers behind it don't believe that Google has the best interests for the product.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm kind of worried, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I'm worried, because I still feel like Now is doing some pretty cool stuff. I do feel like things have slowed down a little bit. What I'm curious to know is, in the next 2 years or so, if Google has the same intention with Now as it's had the previous 2 years, which was basically that it was kind of hedging Android's success around it. And are we starting to see kind of a different strategy in that regard?
I mean, I don't know. I just want it to continue being as awesome as it is. I use it all the time. I rely on it. I can't imagine Google jeopardizing that in any way. It's one of their key things, right? Like, they are so good at this. Like, I think they're the best. They have the best kind of assistant, if you want to call it that, of any of the platforms right now. And I mean, the only one that comes close, I actually think, right now is Amazon. Right, with the Echo or whatever it's called, the little speaker.
Mm-hmm.
What's their assistant called? I don't use it, so I don't know.
Alexa. The Echo. I hear
tons of mom and pops, like everyday people, who just love this stuff and swear by it. So, but you never hear anybody being excited about Siri. And Cortana is still too. I mean, I love Cortana. I think it's great. But you really have to be more heavily invested in the Microsoft ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Although now with the Android version, I mean, you know, I encourage you to try it out. On Windows Phone, it's really awesome. So I haven't really used it too much on a Windows laptop, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, neither have I.
But Alexa is – that's the only – honestly, the only company right now that I could see beat Google to the punch if Google doesn't continue putting effort and energy into Google+ is with mm-hmm. Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they might not have the search results, but they can partner with Bing, Microsoft, or whatever for the right. search results. And then at the same time, they have access to this incredible database of products. A lot of people do simple queries around, you know, trying to resolve problems in their lives. And a lot of these things are related to logistics.
Sure.
And Amazon is like Uber and like a few others out there is like the logistic, you know, master, I guess, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I think it'll be really interesting to see, and I really do think that Google has an opportunity to be a pretty big player in this logistics world, because they have, you know, Google Shopping and all that other stuff that they're doing, and you know, we'll see how it plays out, but I hope they don't neglect that stuff.
Yeah, that's I would agree with that completely.
An interesting bit in the Recode article, I don't know if that's in the show notes or not, but is that the non-user-facing side of this is that Google's mobile ad and you know, app ad business is much lower margin than their search ad business, of course, that powers everything else. As part of the alphabet change is, of course, separating the powerhouse search from every other department. Google Now is posited there to be kind of like was originally going to be their way into apps, mobile search and things like that to get them in and maybe raise the revenue rates in that area. Mm-hmm. So it's not all just, you know, kind of developers not, it's not supposedly developers not only getting what they want, but also kind of Google strategically, either, I don't know, hard to say what they're doing exactly, but, that's a key part of it for them is trying to figure out how they're going to make as much money or, you know, more money in this new kind of field that they're not as hooked into.
Right. Right. Well, cool. Well, I'm looking forward. I'm obviously I have, you know, Marshmallow, this isn't my next yeah. six. This is the OnePlus 2. I don't have Marshmallow on this one. But I am running Marshmallow. The third developer preview just released, you know, last week, and now on tap is still disabled. So it's definitely a feature that they're holding for the official release. It's kind of interesting that Google showed it off but didn't give you instant access to it for months. They don't do that very often.
That's weird, right?
So that does make me kind of scratch my head, particularly if it was leading up to I/O and, you know, a lot of, you know, there was, as Recode says, a staff exodus in the Now team. Maybe that's part of the reason, you know, was there a little bit of a damage control situation or whatever it is. But
yeah, you've got to wonder if they put it back into the presentation to appease the staffers who stayed.
Yeah, right.
And then the fact that it's been missing from the developer previews, was it not as baked as we hoped it would be when I/O right. happened, you know, and then it leads you to believe, will it be fully functional when the final Marshmallow release does come out? You know,
so. I certainly hope so, because guess what, Microsoft has a fully functional version of it, yep. So Google better as well.
But the thing working against Microsoft in that case is that it's Bing,
yeah,
and that, you know, like I mean, yes, it's fully functioning, but I'll wait for the Google Now one. I mean, you know,
oh
like,
sure, I think a lot of people would agree with that as well. Android lock patterns. Anyone here secure your phone with a lock pattern?
No,
I used to.
Everybody's shaking their head.
You know, I'm on numbers.
It's yeah. kind of terrible because I just don't lock my phone. I do on my iPhones because of
you probably should.
I know, but because of I have so many of them and I just swap them all the time. And honestly. Yeah. The Galaxy S6 fingerprint reader does not work with my thumbs.
Oh, interesting.
It is, like, typically, like, it's the second or third try, and then every now and then, I go through the entire number of tries I have mm-hmm. allowed, and then I have to type in that stupid long password I set up.
Mm-hmm.
And now the OnePlus 2 here actually works pretty well for me, and I am finally happy to have an Android phone with a fingerprint reader I can actually use.
Right.
But, you know, It's just tough because it's like on one hand I know that's a security hole, but on the other hand it's such a hassle to dial in this thing and this pattern or this code.
We
found that, you know, and this is what the story is. Mm-hmm. It's like it's actually really, you get maybe 100 tries before you can unlock most people's phones.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, like, and you know, I've seen, you know, you give your phone to somebody or somebody gives their phone to you or they go to unlock it real quick. It's pretty hard to not see the pattern that they put in if it's secured for the pattern. So there's that whole security factor, the fact that it's very easy to kind of peer over a shoulder and see and understand. But how many times have I seen someone do that and it's as simple as like the letter C or the letter S? Yeah. Or a square. Yeah. It's like, how secure is that? Well, let's see. Who is this? This is Marte Loge, I believe. She's a recent graduate of the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. She collected nearly 4,000 lock patterns for her master's thesis. She analyzed that data and found some interesting patterns that kind of show how predictable this method of locking can be. For instance, 44% start in the top left corner, 77% start in one of the four corners, so always starting in a corner. Average number of connections of nodes was around 5. I would have imagined that would be more like 4. I feel like everybody does 4, but apparently there's enough above that to kind of push it up to 5. More than 10% were drawing an alphabetic letter on the grid.
Wow.
So
like
when
that, SML.
Yeah. That's fascinating.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that actually makes perfect sense. I mean, as with passwords, as with actual word, you know, phrase or numeric, alphanumeric passwords, oftentimes people will choose something that's easy to remember. And what's easier to remember than random letters and numbers? Well, words, you know, something as easy as that. So I'm not surprised at all that there's
I actually think the four-digit PIN is what I would pick right now on an Android phone if I wanted to lock it and I didn't have a fingerprint reader.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we will talk about the issues I have with the OnePlus 2 in a minute and the reason why I can't make it my daily driver. But I really am looking forward to the new Nexuses because they have a fingerprint reader. And finally, I can have a secure phone that hopefully I can make my daily driver.
Yeah.
Because the GS6, as I said, it's like I don't know why. For me, it just doesn't work. And it doesn't matter. I've tried both thumbs. And honestly, I don't want to do like my index finger. I just want to do left or right thumb. So I pick up my phone, hold it, it unlocks. Or the other hand, hold it, unlocks. That's all I really need.
Do you think, Kevin, do you feel like in this day and age with the amount that we're using our smartphones, the amount of stuff we're keeping on the smartphones, that it's our responsibility to select one of these security features and move forward with it? And if so, what do you think is the best way?
I think Apple has it right with offering the fingerprint, offering fingerprint authentication, Touch ID. Even if it doesn't work for some people, it just seems like the best, you know, what's the three things, like secure, easy, and, you know, something else. Like it's the right
combination.
Yeah.
It just feels about right. And I'm excited for the OnePlus 2's fingerprint reader. You know, like with the swipe patterns, I always feel like it's just enough to keep people who casually want to read my texts away. But if someone is like stealing my phone, like, haha, time to you know, I'm going to wipe this and sell it to another third world country. Like, they'll definitely get in. If I have a fingerprint pattern, they can just look at the grease pattern on my screen.
Right. The smudge pattern. Although,
the smudge pattern. Yeah,
exactly. Although one thing that people don't know often is that you can retrace steps in that pattern. You don't have to, when you're drawing out, it almost makes it look like your only available slots are ones that you haven't drawn over before.
Mm-hmm.
So if you kind of redraw over other areas, you can kind of hide that a little bit. Or you accentuate it, I suppose, because you're going over it again. I don't know. Yeah, it just seems like the pattern method is probably the least, you know, well, it's not the least. Face recognition, if that still exists, is an unlock method.
And there are so many smart unlock features in newer versions of Android with either location, there's on-device detection, if it can tell if it just pulled it out of your pocket. You know, like, there's so many ways that you can make it so you don't have to unlock your phone when you don't need to.
Agreed.
That having a PIN for those occasions where you don't have a smart unlock feature enabled makes sense.
Absolutely. Agree. All right, and Ron, what about bloatware? Google's bloatware.
A little bit. I think we can all agree that we're anti-bloatware, right? We've complained a lot about Samsung and the amount of apps that they pre-install on the phones.
Yeah.
And I guess we kind of let Google slide because we trust Google. But in some good news in the war against bloatware, Google is going to be trimming down on some of its pre-installed software. Play Games, Play Books, Newsstand, and Google Plus are no longer required installs for OEMs cleared for the Google Mobile Services license. So this is a good move, right? I mean, Miriam, I mean, I got to imagine you'd rather have less bloat on your phone than not,
oh,
right?
Oh, my God, yes. I can't wait. I mean, it's kind of sad, though, because, you know, actually, I think there was a story. This is not this week's news, but last week's news, I think, of Google reducing the requirements for what apps? So I actually think that I'm getting to the point where I'm annoyed with the amount of Google stuff pre-installed on my Nexus and other phones, actually. Mm. So I'm kind of glad going away.
Feeling like it's kind of ballooning.
Well,
more and more.
I only need like I'm going to need Gmail and maybe Maps and Chrome, and you know the rest I think should kind of be like accessories, really. I mean, I'll always install Google Plus and Google Play Music because I subscribe to All Access, and Google Plus I use extensively,
right.
But I'm not even sure, and Drive usually because, you know, I want to be productive, and that means I'm going to install Docs and Sheets and Slides, but I think those shouldn't be on there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of the, like the Play Store should be on, Gmail, Calendar maybe, what else, Chrome and Maps. Those should be the only ones.
I guess it's always relative, though, right? It's all, or rather, it's always subjective.
I mean, now they have
when
clock,
one person's
right? Do you really need
no-brainer app is another person's? Why
need,
is this on
Do you need
here?
To install the clock app from Google, like to replace the clock app you got from Samsung? I mean, is it like?
Well.
Like I'm asking this not as to be provocative. I'm struggling with it because on one hand I love the consistency of having the same clock app on all my Android phones.
Right.
But at the same time I find it kind of ridiculous when I think about it. I'm like, am I actually really going to go through the hassle of installing the clock app when I have probably a perfectly fine and usable clock app on the phone already shipping? Like, it's tough, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Like what do you guys think?
It's all subjective.
Well, Kevin, after you.
Oh, I don't know a human being who's ever said to me, oh, geez, where is Google Play Newsstand? I cannot find it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't know who pulls the switch inside Google and says, guys, we have not taken over the world with this Google Play Newsstand. Like, we need to stop torturing people with it. Like, we don't have the 10-year lead that iTunes Music had. We need to just cut bait here or something. It must have been a really hard call, but I'm really glad it's gone because if I really want to read Esquire through Google Play Newsstand, I'll go find it.
Yeah. Esquire's really important though, Kevin, and more people need to read Esquire. And Google
Play Newsstand. Yes, the Venn diagram of like hardcore AOSP users and Esquire readers. They must just be two overlapping circles. It must be amazing.
Yeah, I'm imagining the smallest wedge right in the middle.
This is also part of the de-plusification, right? By removing Google Plus as a required application, minimizes the presence of Google Plus on users' phones. So that's another step in that direction. And you've got to wonder, going to Kevin's point, you know, is this a commentary on the use of Play Games, Playbooks, and Newsstand as Google identified? Because I can't imagine the space that this is. It doesn't seem like it's a space saver. You know, is it just that people aren't using these apps? I don't. You know, like I wonder what the motivation of it is. And I'm trying to look to see how much space Newsstand takes up on my phone.
I can't imagine it takes up very much space.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. It's probably a combination of both. Like, you know, how it's probably actually Google has the ability to see that, you know, to analyze the metrics of how many of all those pre-installs, how many people are actually opening the Newsstand even once? Yeah. Oh, not many? Maybe we don't need to have it on there if it's not, you know, if it's just annoying their users.
35
people.
35.6 megs on mine.
Yeah, so here are the stats as far as they are on my phone. Google Play Books takes up 30 meg, Google Play Games takes up 29 meg, and Google Play Newsstand takes up 35 meg.
Oh, yeah,
and,
those are tiny.
And the last time I've opened any of those on my phone was never.
So. Yeah, no, that's exactly my point. That's why I think like there should be some core apps. There should always be some core apps. Yeah. But like I think, you know, there's a lot, not anything that's a store that's, you know, beyond the Play Store for the apps. To me, that should all be like, you know, Google Play Music, Play Movies, Play Games, Newsstand, the book one. I mean, who cares? Like, who uses Google for books? Anyone?
Some people do.
Amazon,
yeah,
right?
Some people I mean,
some people,
you know,
but it's like so rare.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably not by and large.
And here's the thing,
it's not the same type of uptick as Maps.
We're going to get to the hardware in a minute, but I got a phone from to review for Before You Buy,
mm-hmm.
and from Karsten, and it's like super cheap. He's been like trying to I think he's trying to challenge me to review mid and low end phones to see if my brain will explode.
Oh, Miriam, we all get challenged with that.
Did you see my review of the Galaxy Grand Prime on Before You Buy last Friday? Watch Before You Buy, guys. It's really funny. It was a turd of a phone. And this phone is an LG. So that was a $200 phone, which was not even remotely as good as a Moto G. And I'm currently reviewing an LG phone that sells for $99 on contract and runs Android, and it's actually pretty decent. But here's the thing. It has 8 gigs of built-in storage.
Oh, I know.
Do you know how painful
that is? That is one of the areas that they
And of course,
pinch.
It has micro SD, so you can put a micro SD. But right. Do you know how painful it is to have all of the Google apps and all of the LG apps installed on that thing?
Sure.
Guess what? How much there is space left for me to put music on?
I'm guessing 4.5 gigs.
Nope, 1 gig.
One? Wait a minute. 1 gig of usable space after all the pre-installed stuff? That is
between
intense.
Sprint stuff, because it's Boost Mobile, whatever. Between Boost Mobile, Virgin, Sprint, whoever it is, I don't even know what carrier that thing is on.
Oh, boy.
Between that, between Google and between LG, you've got about maybe a gig and a gig and a half. It's ridiculous.
Wow. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
That is one area.
And so here's a phone that is a perfectly decent phone, actually, for the price. I'm really surprised how good this thing is. But it's pretty much virtually unusable unless you spend $20 on an SD card.
Yeah. Wow.
Great.
You're not the only one to be challenged with reviewing the different types of devices. The challenge that I see, well, I think we just have these products and they all deserve reviews. I think the challenge becomes when you're reviewing something like, and we're kind of talking about hardware stuff right now, but when you're reviewing something like the OnePlus 2 at the same time that you're reviewing something like that, the challenge becomes not comparing them to each other.
Of course, yeah.
And not judging the low-cost device because it doesn't have fast charge or whatever because that's what you're used to. And that becomes a big challenge because some people, hey, they have $100 to spend on something and they want to know what the best device is that they can buy with that $100.
I have to tell you, I'm pretty impressed. Pretty impressed. I'll watch my review on Before You Buy when I get back from the. But if I manage to get through the wall.
Yeah, if you get through the wall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Check it out. Hey, before we move on to thank our first sponsor, want to address a little bit of a hot button topic from this past week.
Uh-oh. What's going on?
One email of a few. We got a few emails through, you know, through the email AA at twit.tv or Google Plus,
whatever.
Did you anger
them, Jason?
No, just listen. Somebody wrote in to say, I listen to the show because I'm an Android user. I have no interest in hearing how the iPhone has a better camera, GPS, battery life, or whatever else the iPhone fanboy likes about that product. This is in reference, of course, to last week when we started to talk about the new Samsung hardware and swiftly turned into a different direction when Francisco Franco made his declarations about how he obviously prefers iPhone over Android. This coming from somebody who is a pretty big name in the Android development world. So,
and it's important to note that he was talking from a hardware standpoint. That he did make the clarification, which a lot of people might have missed. But he made the clarification that he loves the Android platform as a software development platform, but he's personally had frustrations with Android hardware.
That's a really good point point to make there. So just a few things about this. One, he was sharing his opinion. Everybody has an opinion, right? Two, we aren't going to keep people from sharing their opinion. I'm sorry if you want for us to not let people talk about iOS on the show when it comes up organically, which I kind of feel like it did. And we followed it in that direction because it was one of those things where once he started talking about it, it was like, okay, I have to know more about how this happened.
And it's also worth noting that that wasn't the first time that's happened. In fact, people at the table today have discussed iOS.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And we've discussed it openly, and everyone shares their opinion, and that's the whole point of this.
I think overall, the lines blur incredibly between operating systems, and it's impossible to talk about one and only one and never address the others.
Yeah, I mean, I've hijacked the entire show once from Microsoft, remember?
That's all right.
The thing I want to tell you guys, okay, listen to me. This is really important. You need to understand. You need to have an open mind, right? I just spent 20 minutes on the phone with Dieter Bonn of The Verge yesterday, and we were basically talking about the OnePlus 2 and the Galaxy Note 5 and all these new phones. And, you know, one of his takes is that he still believes the iPhone camera is better than even the Galaxy S5. Mm-hmm. Sorry, the Galaxy Note 5 and the S6. And I disagree, but you know what? I think he has a point. Where he's coming from is, in terms of consistency and simplicity of use, it's still slightly better, even though I think the end results on the Note 5 are slightly better, personally.
Sure, the experience.
But the thing is, the fact that you have the managing editor of The Verge, who is one of the most knowledgeable people in the phone world, you know, bring up the iPhone when you bring up the top Android phones in a conversation means that this is a relevant discussion to have. I am sorry, you cannot talk about Android cameras without talking about the iPhone, without talking about the Lumias. Perhaps now they're getting a little dated, right. but there's some.
But
more
than that, without talking about the competitors that also have great
cameras. And if you don't do that, you're doing yourself a disservice. Right. I mean, you're just being close-minded, A, and B, you don't live in a vacuum. We don't live in a vacuum.
Right.
Like, why do you think the GS6 Note 5 and the LG G4 have such fantastic cameras this year? Because of Apple. I hate to tell you, it's simply only because of Apple.
Competition breeds innovation, which is a good thing.
Sure.
And, you know, and then for the same reason, you know, why, you know, I use OS X on my home computer, but I, when Windows 10 comes out, I look at it to see what they're doing. I want to be aware of what's available in every operating system and keeping an open mind that way. And while we're covering Android and our heart, and, you know, personally, my blood bleeds green. I'm aware of what's, you know, like, and I'm always curious. My friends who use iOS, I'm like, oh, I want them to show me what they're doing, what they like about it and all that sort of stuff. It's like, You can't just be myopic in your view. You need to look at everything.
Sure. Now, one thing we didn't do is we didn't finalize our thoughts on Samsung hardware. And for that, I will say I'm sorry. But not for very long, because after the we thank a sponsor of today's episode, we're going to talk a little bit and kind of finalize things. Yes, thank you for that hot button graphic. Did you just whip that together, Brian?
That's your weekly hot button topic. Pew, pew,
pew. All right.
All right. So before we get to the actual hardware section, let's thank the sponsor of today's episode. That's LegalZoom.com. Definitely check it out. Do you want the government to decide things like what happens to your property? Children, you know, if you happen to pass away, or, you know, these, they're hard questions to ask yourself. But you want to make a commitment to protect your family. It's what I actually did 5 years ago when we had our first kid. We used LegalZoom.com before I even worked at Twit. And got a last will and living trust done. And it was super easy. It's National Make-A-Will Month at LegalZoom.com. Doing the right thing has never been easier. They make it super easy for you. They've created a better way for you and your spouse to take control of your family's future. You can check out LegalZoom's new last will and living trust bundles. The more you plan ahead with things like wills, trusts, and powers of attorney, the more you'll save. LegalZoom's online resources and estate planning tools help you figure out what you need so you won't be confused by all of the options that they can provide for you. Or you can get more specific guidance from LegalZoom's network of independent attorneys in most states, since they are not a law firm, but they work with attorneys to provide you, you know, help and advice through their network. Don't procrastinate. When it comes to protecting your family, you need to do this. Get legal help that you can count on at LegalZoom.com today. And, you know, by the way, they have a whole lot of other services, a whole lot of other ways that they can help you out. So definitely take a look. Don't forget to enter AAA in the referral box at checkout to save even more. That's LegalZoom.com. Enter offer code AAA. And we thank LegalZoom.com for their support of All About Android. All right, so I teased it a little bit. Let's get to some hardware. So it was like we started the conversation last week around the Samsung announcement, and then it totally veered off in another direction, and we never returned. So consider this us returning to it. Just a real quick recap: the Note 5 and the Galaxy S6 Edge Plus. In the convening weeks since then, we've had some time to think about it. Kevin, let's start with you. Did either of these devices instill in you the need to rush out and buy them?
No.
Okay. Did any of them? Are you excited about what you saw? What did you think about these devices?
After doing some reading today, I'm really excited about the pen on the Galaxy Note. I'm thinking myself, what could be more intuitive than having a pen that pops out of your phablet and then using it to write down your thoughts, which you only have once in your life, and then put away the pen in a single motion. That also signals the end of your thoughts. Oh, what could be? It's like they've reimagined how we think. That's what I'm most excited about.
I think they've extended how you're used to doing things into mm-hmm. the digital world. Is what they've done. Actually, one of the things that I think is really cool about the Note 5 in that regard is that you can pull the pen out and you can write on the screen without turning the screen on. So, like, how many times are you somewhere and you're like, like you were saying, Kevin, you have that thought and you're like, oh, I got to write this down, instead of like what you normally would have to do in the Android world, which is pull the pen out, wake the screen up, unlock it, launch the app, go in, whatever. You just kind of go right on the screen. And I think that's great.
I ask you, what could go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong in that process? Okay. You're teasing to something here. Before we get to that, because I have a feeling that's going to dominate the conversation once we get there, S6 Edge Plus, Miriam, did that impress you?
No.
It's a larger edge.
There is absolutely no doubt in my mind that the Note 5 and the Galaxy 6 Edge Plus are phenomenal phones. They're mm-hmm. just going to hit. I mean,
they're
look,
powerful.
We know the Galaxy S6 and the 6 Edge and just 6 yeah, Edge. Just make them bigger and, you know, add a stylus on one of them. It's going to be awesome. My takeaway is it's hard for me to imagine anyone spending that kind of money anymore, A.
Because they are very expensive.
They are very expensive.
Off contract, yes.
B, yeah, the bigger screen, but it's really, you're just getting a GS6, really. I mean, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's great phone.
Four gigs of RAM, that's different, right?
Four gigs of RAM is different. I'm a bit bummed because, you know, I'm not a huge fan of interchangeable batteries and SD cards. I don't think they're necessary for the average consumer. But the Note has always had that special place.
Yes.
That was that like crazy pro, super nerdy, awesome, like everything in the kitchen sink kind of product. And that meant a battery you could replace and storage expansion. And we kind of knew it was coming, but I'm really bummed in a way that Samsung made the choice. Like, to me, what they should have done is three phones.
Which, knowing Samsung, that's not outside of the realm of possibility.
I mean, they should have made a Galaxy S6 Plus, a Galaxy S6 Edge Plus, which are exactly mirrors of the existing products, and not even put 4 gigs of RAM, just 3 gigs, exactly the same phones, just mm-hmm. bigger, and slightly more foldable than what the Note 5 and G6
Plus.
Edge Plus yes. are. And then make the Note 5 like the mother of all, like everything, just go crazy. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it was the right decision for them, because it's interesting to me that they're kind of running after Apple, but at the same time shooting themselves in the foot, because they actually had something so special with the Note.
Yeah,
honestly, differentiated to me, the Note was really the phone every year that mattered from Samsung, not the Galaxy S. And well, now we don't have that anymore. Mm-hmm. We have just the Galaxy S6 Plus with the Note 5.
Right.
I think there's a branding thing happening going on here and making more of a marketing or business-based decision in that, you know, like you said, you know, the Note differentiated itself both from its size as well as from those extra features that it offered. And now all the other phones have caught up in the size standpoint. And so they take away the features, which is baffling. But I seriously, you know, I'm looking at what they're doing with the Note, and I think this is purely to give another phone for people who have already bought the Note. Someone who's like, I bought the Note, I like it. What's the next one I get? Oh, I just get the Note 5.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, I think it comes down to that, is that you've got millions of people who have bought the previous Notes, so they just want the sequel, the next one, you know, and they're like, no, I don't buy the Galaxy, I buy the Note. So, you know, which seems baffling, but as big of a company of Samsung, you know, yeah, brand continuity, probably something they're concerned about.
And, you know, it's not just the battery and the SD card that is lacking in these devices.
IR?
It's also the IR port,
so
which,
bizarre.
You know, it's kind of a cool feature, I thought, of Samsung. It's maybe not the thing that catches all the headlines, but it's definitely a cool feature. So they've definitely simplified these things.
But the GS6 is the IR port.
In place of that, you get the kind of, I don't know, elevated design, I suppose.
The GS6 has the IR port, right?
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Oh.
So there's a GS6 Edge. Yeah, does the GS6 Edge Plus have the IR port? Does anyone know in chat?
Because I have
a feeling if it does, then it's just a Note 5. It's like weird.
Now, not only that, the Note 5 is not available in Europe. I wonder why that is. I'm very curious to know why that is. Because I imagine 6, it probably sold.
Because the why? Note 6 is going to get announced at IFA, don't you know?
Oh,
they want
right?
to. They want to get the numbers to match this year.
Jeez.
Just kidding.
Yeah, right.
Just marketing.
Please don't. And okay, now finally we could talk about what Kevin. And I'm sorry we didn't move there right away. I just knew that this was going to dominate here. What Kevin was alluding to, which is the fact that the Galaxy Note 5. Has the S Pen, of course, and there. So I'm not sure who figured this out. If it was Android Police, but eventually someone was going to figure it out. Essentially, if you put the Note, the S Pen in backwards, there will be no resistance whatsoever, and it will get stuck in there. And literally, if you're able to get it back out again, it will break the sensor inside of the S Pen holder.
Some people have managed to unbreak it, though.
Oh, really? I haven't read that.
So Android Central, I think, tried it, and they were able to remove it. gently by just wiggling it and then putting it back again to undo the, so there, there's the okay. detection wasn't working after they removed it gently. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So they put it back. And so it's like, it could be a toggle thing.
But it's not going to happen every time because
fire,
you
right?
are, because like you can actually break the mechanism. Case in point. Earlier today on MacBreak Weekly, Leo had the Note 5. This topic came up and he started to kind of put it in a little bit. And I understand what Leo was doing. What he expected to happen. By the way, don't do this at home. It's obvious at this point. You just don't do this.
It's like the red button that says, do not press the red button.
What he expected to happen was when you put it in for there to be some sort of either resistance or drag or something in there that clues you in to know that there's a thing that's about to clamp down on it and not release it. And he said he felt absolutely nothing. Just at a certain point, he decided to pull it back out. And it wouldn't remove. He later took it to AT&T to show them because he bought it full price from AT&T. They said it's not their problem. Oh. I think eventually he ended up popping it out, and I think it actually kind of broke the component.
You know,
this
is hard. Okay, I'm sorry. I have carrier rant moment. Like seriously, AT&T. Like, this is a news item in the news this week. You're gonna get a bunch of people coming to your stores because they tried it. And you're going to tell them you're not going to fix this?
Well,
for them?
I mean, but does it fall on AT&T?
I don't care.
Does it fall on Samsung? Or is it just don't put the S Pen in wrong?
If you put your freaking brand on the freaking phone, your freaking globe of doom,
okay.
You better freaking support your freaking phone.
I'm afraid to sit next to you right now. No, please don't hurt me.
Think about it. This doesn't make any sense. If the phone was sold by Samsung, right. unsubsidized, then of course Samsung, AT&T has nothing to do with it. Samsung should be the one fixing it.
Okay.
But what I think should happen here is AT&T, and this is a problem with the carriers, they don't want to take responsibility for the products they sell. They should at this point say, okay, we have a problem. Let's talk to Samsung. And in the meantime, you don't even ask questions. You replace the phone for free. This is called customer service. It's a simple freaking thing.
That I agree with.
But I think you're missing one big factor that you're talking about AT&T.
Well, that's my point, though. That is why I'm having a carrier rant, because carriers need to be ranted at.
Yeah. Well, this is why I'm not an AT&T customer. This is a case in point. These stories like this, you know, like T-Mobile has been bent over backwards to make sure I'm a good customer. So, you know, like the problems like this keep coming up, and AT&T makes the wrong decision.
And it's freaking Leo. Like, they should recognize it and go, "Oh my God, a journalist is bringing their phone in."
That could have either helped or hindered Leo's cause, though, because he was on the show doing it. So you know what I mean. So,
I don't know.
I don't know. So I guess what I'm trying to figure out here, and a lot of people in chat during MacBreak Weekly when it happened, were at least a couple of people were like, you know, all you have to do is not put it in backwards. Like, why would anyone put it in backwards? If you do, you get what's coming to you. My thought is that's what design is all about, right? Like, there's no doubt that the Note 5 was designed really well. But the Note 5, and by the way, this is in the manual. It's in the manual. It's a little part of the manual that says, do not insert it the wrong way. You could break. So I'm sure that their designers checked this and went, oh, if you put it in, it doesn't come out. What I don't understand is there are probably, I imagine, because I've seen it in other devices, ways to prevent it. Like, if it's a perfect circle cylinder, it's going to go all the way in. If it's a cylinder with a certain notch at some point that's going to repel, you know, prevent it from doing that, do that, because that's going to save you a lot of headache, Samsung, a lot of headache on the post from people who just decide, hey, or people that don't know, right? Taking notes is something you do on the fly. It would be very easy in my brain for someone to just be like, oh, I got to go over there now, put it in and walk off, and oh, broken.
Well, and I think that's a great point, that it says a lot about design. But first, you know, like, I never read the phone manual, so like I would have missed it if it was mine.
No one does.
No one does.
Yeah, exactly. But what I think this evidence is how much we've come to depend on things like haptic feedback and, you know, intelligent design where like the slot can only go in one way and things like that. And when a designer missteps like this, it's a big deal, because we've got to the point where product design has evolved to a point where we hope that the manufacturers anticipate this as opposed to letting it happen.
See, if this was an Apple product, ..
Well, there wouldn't be a stylus.
It wouldn't be happening.
If this was an Apple product, there wouldn't be a stylus.
I mean,
the best stylus,
if it was an Apple product, it would just bend.
Yeah.
You know? thank you, Brian. He's good.
Yeah, he was ready for that one. So, yeah. Okay. Well, there's that.
There's no better way to talk about, to move from S Pens that don't work than talk about BlackBerry.
I'm so excited about this.
So.
I know. Yeah, I was gonna say. So we've been hearing rumors about BlackBerry, you know, releasing an Android device, and now we're starting to see some things leak and some possible photos. But the upcoming, as of unannounced, Android sliding keyboard smartphone, known internally within BlackBerry as BlackBerry Venice, is reported to be launching in November with support from all four major U.S. carriers. And this has the sliding physical keyboard that we have that we've been hearing about. Do we think, you know, I feel like every couple of weeks we ask the same question. Can BlackBerry running Android resuscitate the BlackBerry brand?
Are you going to rush out and actually, Kevin, maybe I should ask you, what phone do you use right now? What do you have?
The OnePlus One.
The OnePlus One. All right. Are you still digging it?
Yeah. I mean, in the way that you do until you see the two, but yeah, I am.
Ouch.
You know, literally hour before I saw it, I was like, this is a great phone. Then an hour after I saw it, this phone is utter garbage. This thing should be thrown in the trash.
That is like, yeah, millions of Android users have said that very thing, because there's just always something coming out.
Yeah, it's so strange. It's well, you should describe it, because then I have something to say about it.
Describe the OnePlus 2. Venice.
The keyboard, it's a portrait keyboard.
Yeah, you're right.
No, that's actually awesome.
I mean, but that's how they were on BlackBerries, though. No, I guess BlackBerries had portrait and wider keyboards as well.
But BlackBerry's always had like kind of a portrait form factor. So even though the screen was a landscape screen.
Yeah,
but not that thin. Not that.
Yeah, you're right.
Kind of like crowned portrait. But I don't know. Like most keyboards, you'd have to feel it. But from what the article suggests, they don't seem to have a lot of travel. They seem pretty thin.
Right. Like looking at it, kind of reminds me of the keyboard that I had. I mean, I realize it's not the same, but kind of the shallowness of the Motorola Droid, my original smartphone. And typing on that keyboard, I never really liked, because the buttons were so tiny and very short travel. And that's one thing that BlackBerry devices always kind of had for them, is they had nice, small, but bubbly enough that you could kind of fly your thumbs on the keys and it would work fine. It doesn't look like you'd get that out of this. I don't know.
I think it's awesome. I've been saying for a while that BlackBerry should give up on BB10 and do an Android phone, and boom, they do the Venice. And then now there's rumors we've seen of the Passport running Android, and the Passport is a really awesome form factor. It's weird, but I really dig it. And hardware-wise, the Snapdragon 800 or 801 with a 13-megapixel camera with OIS, it's a really good piece of hardware.
This is the wide one, right?
If it could run Android, it'd be awesome. So I don't know. I think this could be interesting. I personally...
The BlackBerry Passport.
I don't think I would use the keyboard if I had a Venice.
I'll put that in the dock for you, Brian.
But I'm excited about the choice of another phone from a company that has a huge amount of experience making phones good audio quality, good RF performance, etc. All the things you expect a good phone to have. I'm really excited of BlackBerry finally making an Android phone. And so for that alone, I'll try to get a review in it.
Yeah.
I think we've talked about it before, and I've said it every time before, is that BlackBerry was a leader in the space 8 years ago. You know, like this is wholly a release that is at least 5 years too late.
Yeah,
and I think it's gonna be as impactful on the space as the Amazon Fire Phone or the Facebook Phone. I think it's gonna flop. If you ask me,
it's not going to save them, but I actually expect that, unlike the Amazon Fire Phone, which is completely contaminated by the crappy software that Amazon put on it, this thing, even though you'll have all this BlackBerry stuff that, you know, EV leaks already showed, Evan, I think you'll be able to run in mostly stock Android if you want, and that's going to work for us.
Mm-hmm.
Those of us who are really, you know.
Right.
The irony of me calling this a flop is I want to remind our viewers that in 2006, I swore I would never own a phone that didn't have a physical keyboard, and I have not owned one since the G1. So, who am I to make predictions?
Times change.
Times are changing.
Paradigms shift. as they say. All right, let's not spend too much time on it because I know we could probably talk about it for hours. But the OnePlus 2, Kevin Purdy's potentially new phone, have it right here. OnePlus 2, little fingerprint. I don't know what the actually. We can probably show it on the overhead shot here. So I've been playing around with this for about a week. I did get it last Wednesday, so I've had it for about 6 days. And Miriam, I think you've had it for even longer than that. What do you think?
I've had about the same duration as you, but I was lucky enough to do the hands-on for Pocket Now at the launch. What do I think? Well, you know what I said last time after I came on the show after I first played with it? I'm very disappointed with the lack of NFC because I actually use NFC. And having a fingerprint reader and the ability to do authentication for payments but not having the hardware to do the Google Pay payments is going to be kind of silly, I think. The other thing that I'm disappointed is the no fast charge and no wireless charging. You're going to say at that price point, I don't care. This to me, if it's going to be a flagship killer and pretend to be a flagship killer, I think it should have these features. Yeah. And it would have cost them maybe $50 more to make these features happen. But what's bumming me out the most, honestly, the fingerprint reader, by the way, works pretty well for me. Some people are having problems with it.
And I have a little bit of issues with
some
it.
People are having no problems with GS6, and I'm having problems with the GS6. So my biggest disappointment is the lack of performance on the camera. It turns out that the camera hardware is, on paper, brilliant, but clearly the software is not up to the task because low light performance is worse than a Nexus 6. Forget it. It's like, it's just really bad. And even the daylight stuff, their HDR isn't that great. I'm just really disappointed with the camera, more so than I was after I tested it at the hands-on. But the hands-on, I didn't have a chance to do low light photography at all, so I couldn't tell. It's got a lot of details in normal pictures and everyday in like normal light, but as soon as you get to low light, it doesn't seem like OIS is even doing anything.
I've like, got a little mustache there.
So I don't know, frankly. I'm bummed. I know that OnePlus is not going to fix it. They never fixed the camera on the OnePlus One. So what's the track record when I'm actually addressing these issues?
I have to say that I too share your frustration with the camera. I have not been very happy with it. I feel like it's slow. The laser autofocus. I hear laser autofocus, and for better or for worse, I expect fast.
That's completely wrong. I heard you and Leo on the show the other day, and
I don't know. Maybe that's
to call in because I want to show you something. This is how laser autofocus works. Okay, it works fantastically well, and that's the whole point of it. Okay, now I don't know if you guys can show the video here. I don't know if you can scroll up with that.
No, yeah.
But I need to show you this.
Okay, so here, how about I do the hand?
You have to be much closer.
Okay, but hold it down so that they can see.
Here.
Okay, how about that?
Okay,
is that good?
So what we need to do now is, you need to move your hand up. I don't know if we're going to be able to see it. Look how quickly it focuses. Go back down. Look at that. Do you see that?
Okay. I see what you mean.
Look how fast it is.
Okay.
Down.
Okay. It's kind of hard to see at this angle, but I see what it's doing.
Look how fast it is. It's instantaneous.
Okay.
I mean, there's a video out there. Look at it, guys. There's a video out there by Marques Brownlee.
Mm-hmm.
Who actually shows you this, literally, where he puts his hand in front of the camera and it instantly focuses, removes it, focuses on the background, back and forth. So we know it's not the laser autofocus. It's their implementation of the laser autofocus that's flawed.
Got it. Okay.
And so, you know, I don't know what they're doing. It's the whole camera software stack is broken on their OnePlus 2 right now.
It's kind of a bummer. I would agree that not having NFC is kind of a big downside for it, particularly because you have the fingerprint and you want to be able to pair those two if mobile payments is in your future. I don't know. This is a hard review for me because I'm recording the review tomorrow and I don't know what my verdict is on it. I think the real challenge on it, it's not an instant buy, I don't think, but for the price, it's pretty good. You realize that you're making sacrifices and you kind of have to throw the marketing out the window, right? Yeah, they say 2016 flagship killer. Don't listen to them when they say that because that is simply not true.
That's not true.
But is it good for $325 for 16 gigs or whatever it is, $380 somewhere for 64 gigs? Yeah, I think it's pretty good there. Is it recommended as an instant buy for somebody? I don't know. That depends on how much you think you would miss having something like mobile payments. If that doesn't matter to you, then it certainly elevates this in the scale of a phone that you might want.
One thing that's weird to think about is that it has USB-C, which almost no other phone has at this point, but it doesn't have NFC, which seems like something that almost every other phone is picking up now.
Yeah. I feel like NFC is just one of those basic features that most, if not all, phones seem to have nowadays, and yet it's not on here. You're right, it does have USB-C. It doesn't have the USB 3.1 implementation built into that. So it's USB-C by connector, not necessarily with the extra features that some people expect because of Apple's implementation.
Brian, that's odd that if you're waiting for NFC payments to become a real thing, to buy a phone right now that doesn't have NFC, even if it doesn't really feel like it's really kind of like a part of your day, you know, your work day-to-day flow to use your phone to pay for stuff or authenticate stuff, you're buying into a year and a half, 2 years where, you know, you don't have the ability to even interact with that.
Mm-hmm. Brian, was that video the G4 review from Marquez, or was that?
No, that was the OnePlus 2 camera.
Interesting. Okay. So he has actually seen some pretty good performance with that laser autofocus.
Okay.
The problem is that I noticed, so here's the flaws I noticed so far in low light, was that the autofocus doesn't seem to work at all.
Yeah.
Like properly. And the fact that the OIS doesn't seem to work at all. So that kind of completely
kills. I would agree with that. I would agree with that. I expected a little bit better results considering the fact that OIS was on there, and I still get a lot of, you know, even when I'm holding blurry.
It's working. You can see it when you hold the phone stabilizing what you're doing, but it only seems to be doing so properly in normal light, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
For me, the NFC, I use NFC for pairing Bluetooth devices, so I like it for that. Honestly, look, for the price, it's a fantastic phone. If you can overlook the NFC, that's really the biggest one to me. And the camera software can be fixed. And the lack of fast charge and the lack of wireless charging is really
I don't find that it charges very slow. I feel like it charges pretty reasonably.
But you know the thing is...
Fast charge is always better, but...
As I mentioned last time, I think it's quite possible it implements fast charge, but it's not officially compliant. Like the G4 originally was. And then they got the compliance and they were able to talk about it publicly.
Interesting.
So,
okay.
Because remember, the USB 3 implementation has nothing to do with the fast charge implementation. Those are two separate things.
Okay.
And so then the Type-C format, which is a physical connector, is a whole thing altogether.
By the way, speaking of Type-C, just go ahead. All about cables right here, because I know Ron was waiting for this.
Oh, my God.
Sitting on the edge of my seat.
Yeah. Look at that cable.
It's reversible on the USB Type-A, which is really cool. Look at this, guys. You can plug it in any way you want.
Check it out, Ron.
And then look at that. Yeah. Like reversible on the USB Type-C. Whoa.
I'm so it's absolutely sensitive. I'm so upset I'm not there because that cable just looks really durable and just looks like you can plug it in and out and it just stays in.
You can't. The problem you're going to have though, Ron, is that because this is one of the first devices you might own with USB-C, you'll find yourself in the car with a dead battery and going, I just need to charge.
Yesterday,
the only one I have is at home.
Yesterday, I wanted to put music on mine and at my desk, and I've got all these connectors. Yeah. And I grabbed the first micro USB that I found.
You don't realize why that sucks.
Yeah,
because we've had the same cables strewn everywhere for so long. We're so used to it just being that way.
And then I don't have
one. I can just borrow one from you and just use it to charge up.
And then I was I had to find that cable, which was in my bag, and unplug it because it's the only USB-C cable I have in my entire house.
Yeah.
So. I can't. If I lose it, I'm screwed.
Leo's in the chat. He also reminded me of another thing that I completely agree with, is that the screen itself is pretty washed out.
It's a little washed out.
Yeah, it's a little washed out. I mean, these are, I suppose, they're minor quibbles, but I certainly notice it.
I think you have to
when you do it
side
by side with, you know, like Super AMOLED, especially.
Oh my god! Yeah,
you see a big difference.
That Note 5 screen, guys.
It's pretty
god,
nice.
God, that Note 5 screen. Unreal. I didn't think Samsung could get better than the Galaxy S6, but I think they did.
So there you go. I don't know, Kevin, if this is your next phone, I wouldn't say that's a bad choice. It's a good phone, particularly for the money.
But I can't make it my daily driver until they fix the camera.
That's a good consideration. What were you going to say, Kevin?
I am not entirely certain it's my next phone.
Okay.
It just kind of feels like I wish my phone could upgrade for $30.
yeah,
yeah, but Kevin,
Google Play in-app purchase.
Right, but Kevin, look at that cable. I'm telling you.
I mean, seriously. This cable could be yours. Right. This could be yours, Kevin.
The, also, that thing that like ties at the end, that keeps it in a loop.
Right? Yeah, yeah. It's just like I thought of it.
Wait a minute.
Are you doing this on purpose?
The white band that just like ties together and keeps it in a loop in your backpack.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody needs to do a GIF of that.
Yeah. Oh, do it.
See?
Yeah, look at that fast.
See? This could be... Okay, I'm having a hard time, apparently. It's hard to do this and talk at the same time. There you go. Oh, yeah.
What people don't realize is that all about cables is a little blue.
It's hard not to go there. How about we go somewhere else instead? Let's think. Oh,
there's
what's up?
One more thing I want to point out.
One more thing, quick.
Somebody needs to guess in the chat right now what T-shirt I'm wearing. So let's see. Can you get the third going away for a second? Okay. So that's the logo.
All right.
Guess what shirt I'm wearing and who the company is. And all I'm going to say is that this company... it's very exciting what they're doing. That's all I can say. But it's very, very exciting.
Can I just drop one hint and say that we have talked about them on the show in the past?
Of course you can.
Couple of weeks.
Yes.
And apparently there's reason to be excited. That's about all we can say. Okay, let's move on.
Somebody seems to know what I'm talking about in the chat there.
All right, let's thank a sponsor of today's episode. Super excited to have back on board 99 Designs. They're the best place for businesses to build their brands. If you've got the entrepreneurial spirit, you're inclined to do everything yourself. But some things, and I can attest to this personally, require an experienced professional. I'm a horrible designer. Having a copy of Photoshop doesn't make you a graphic designer overnight. I've had so many times where I'm like, you know what? I have this idea. I could totally bang this out. And no, it's so not true. I'm just not a good designer. So That's why 99 Designs is so awesome. It's the world's largest graphic design marketplace. They provided over 400,000 high-quality, affordable designs for businesses and projects of all sizes. They make it very easy, actually. 900,000 designers are just kind of waiting to compete for your business through their contest model. You basically complete a brief, and designers submit their ideas, and you can choose the design that you like best. And as we know, choice is good. You'll get a great design for less than you think. Logo designs start at just $299. It's fast. It's easy. It's an affordable solution. And they can also help you design things like stationery, websites, apps, merchandise, and even more. We've obviously used them many times here at TWiT to design apparel and clothes that we've sold for a limited time through the site. There's one of the t-shirt designs that we had done through 99 Designs, and it's just been great. We got so many great designs that we just kept using them for future shirts. It came really handy. We bought a bunch of the winners and put them out as limited edition. So if you've seen these before, these were generated thanks to 99 Designs. Start your contest now to see the amazing ideas that designers can deliver to you. You'll have a design to start using within 7 days, and your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. Go to 99designs.com/twit, and we've got a free $99 upgrade for fans of TWiT. 99 Designs will highlight your project listing. They'll bump it up to the top and feature it on their blog. On average, this results in over twice as many designs for you to choose from. And again, choice is good. This upgrade is added on for free when you start your project by going to 99designs.com/twit. That's 99designs.com/TWIT. Check it out for yourself. I know you're going to love what you find. And we thank them for their support of All About Android and the TWiT network. All right, before we get to apps, let's take a quick look at hardware. All right, Ron, what we got here?
Yeah, so we had a big Android Wear update recently, which brings a couple of interesting things, new bits of functionality. Interactive watch faces are now a thing that exists thanks to the newly announced Interactive Watch Face API. The Google Play Store has a collection of interactive watch faces that you can install and interact with, oddly enough. tapping one of these watch faces can bring new info to the face, or trigger an animation or some sort of alternate functionality. So it's making watch faces a little more than just a pretty design, making them actually pretty functional, which is cool.
Nice. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, there's actually one new watch face called Together Watch Face that allows you to connect your Android Wear device to another person so you can exchange photos and emoji and all of your emotions. And finally, an update that actually nullifies my arena pick from a couple weeks ago with Microsoft Translate. Google announced Translate for Wear, which supports 44 languages and uses the mic on your watch to provide answers. So you speak the words, flip your wrist, and the translation is played. So as I predicted, Google Translate, now fully functional on Android Wear, and will help you in a pinch when you're in another country you don't know what to say and assuming you have data or downloaded the local library of the languages. Yeah. So Android Wear, big update. Pretty cool.
I'm going to connect the Wear watch that my wife doesn't have to mine and send her emoji.
Well, Jason, I was hoping that we could connect our Android Wear devices and you could send me emoji about cables. We can.
I'll send you the poop emoji just for you, Ron.
Oh, the poop emoji.
Everybody loves
it. Yeah, that censored graphic gets used a lot on this show.
Yeah, it's all nice, about cables. Crazy. Yeah.
Have you gotten in on the Wear bandwagon, Kevin? What is that, a Wear device that I see on your wrist right now? Is that the Moto 360?
I write the best Android smartwatch guide for the Wirecutter, so yes, I'm pretty up. I think I've worn everyone that's been released in the U.S.
All right, then I have to ask, what's at the top of the list?
Yeah,
I did not write a fake guide for the Wirecutter. the Moto 360 is currently the best that you can have on your wrist. As you might be aware, there's two or three that are probably coming out soon. You know, we don't know anything for certain, but what Ron mentioned, I'm really excited about that software update more than anything, because it kind of adds a lot of functionality to Android Wear that we've been missing for a while.
Yeah. Yes, sir, indeed. Cool. Yeah, and I'm looking forward. We keep seeing these leaks about the new Moto 360, like out in the wild with lugs instead of connecting into the base. So hopefully it won't.
The flat tire.
And still the flat tire. They're dedicated to the flat tire. You know, honestly, the flat tire never bothered me. It still doesn't bother me. Although when you see one without it, you're like, why does it have it when another one doesn't? Right? But it's a sensor thing.
With three disclaimers and disclosures that who knows if they're even really releasing the watch, who knows if those people are really wearing the next version of the 360, et cetera, et cetera. If those pictures were correct, it looks like a smaller flat tire.
Yeah, true. At least.
But look at this beauty right here. Look at that.
Is this the Urbane?
That's the Urbane. And like, there's Urbane. No flat tire here. Yeah.
And I mean, I got to say, the screen on
and
this
look,
is...
And look, it dims and it goes back to like a low power really mode. Nice. It's so sweet.
The screen on that is what I think sets it apart.
I really love this one. I know that the Moto 360 is a better value, which is why I understand why the Wirecutter picked it. But I have to say, this Urbane is I'm digging it.
Very nice.
I'm digging it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, how about we talk about a couple of apps real quick? Why don't we? Why don't we do it? Okay. You talked me into it.
I was totally ready for that transition.
Don't worry. It was smooth. All right. So Microsoft has released a public beta for this thing they call Cortana. We talked about it very briefly at the beginning of the show, the top story. Cortana is Microsoft's voice assistant app, and it's been in limited beta until now. Now it's in a public beta, so you can get in on it. You don't have to go to a Google Plus page and become a tester or whatever. There's a direct link, and I think it's in this article that we'll have in the show notes. Just go to twit.tv/AAA. We put all our show notes there, by the way. Every single link from the show is stored there. And you can become a tester and test it out. So I'll go ahead and launch Cortana. Hi, Jason. What's on your mind? What can I help you do now? And so I'll go ahead and say, hold on. Okay, so it has the whole cards thing, right? So it's similar to Google Now in that it provides cards. I'm not getting a whole lot of personalized cards necessarily around my schedule and stuff. You can configure it.
And that's
so you
the
can
way
go
you
into
do
Notebook.
With Cortana, yeah. You really need to do that.
You go, yes. And I went through here. I put everything on.
Oh, you went on.
I was like, show me everything. And I'm still not getting a whole lot there. But, you know, every once in a while I get a notification like this, a notification that says, finish my Cortana review, which it'll be on Android App Arena this week. So let's see here. So, are you better than Google Now?
It's a loaded question.
Why is it not giving me my audio?
My name is a lot less bossy.
My name.
Nice.
It's not giving me my audio.
Is this in the Play Store then? There or is this go. Like a special? Like...
It is in the Play Store. Oh, wow. But it's in Play Store as a beta.
Oh, okay. I'm going to try it right now.
Do you love Clippy? Clippy taught me how important it is to listen. It's not playing the audio. I'm not really quite sure why.
Is your volume down?
No, look, it's blanked out. It's not letting
it
you
just
do
doesn't
it.
Like you, Jason. Yeah. I'm uninstalled.
Anyways, it works, I promise. It's probably just the complicated HDMI thing I have going on right now. But yeah, it's cool. I don't know. It would be hard to pull me away from Google.
I mean,
now,
there's
to be
also
honest.
That launcher they do. What is it called again?
Oh, man. What is that launcher?
Z launcher? No.
Well, they do have the Z launcher, don't they? Or is that Nokia? That's Nokia.
Well, that's...
Well, that's, yeah, but they do different things.
That's not Microsoft. So I'm thinking... But Microsoft has a launcher as well.
They do.
What is it
called? I can't remember the name.
I'm looking for it right now. Yeah. It's, what was it? Arrow. No. Yeah, Arrow.
Arrow, yes.
Arrow launcher. That's what it is.
Okay.
Arrow.
Where is Cortana? Is it called? I don't see Cortana anywhere in the App Store. Where the hell is it?
You can also ask Cortana, what does the fox say? And I bet you already know what the fox says.
The fox says foxy.
Anyways, it's all right. You should check it out, get in on the beta, and see if you like it more than Google Now. I have a feeling you're probably going to stay with Google Now, just because Cortana is so dialed into the Microsoft universe. It's probably very useful for someone who kind of sits on both sides, you know, has an Android device, but uses Windows 10 all the time and uses Cortana and everything like that. No, you're not going to be able to search for it. There's a special link that takes you through to become a tester, and you can get to it in the article in the show notes.
Sweet.
All right, Ron, what else?
All right, a little sad trombone news, Brian, if you want to cue that up. So some of you might remember Cerebus is an app that has been around for a really long time. It was one of the first apps that helped users recover lost or stolen devices. But as we know, then, of course, came along Android Device Manager, Google's official solution, and Cerebus use has probably kind of waned. Longtime users might remember that way back in the day, they ran a couple of promotions that gave users free lifetime licenses to Cerebus's services. And unfortunately, we've reached the end of that lifetime as the developer is revoking those licenses.
Yeah, it happens, I suppose. Yeah.
So Cerebus's official statement on it says, unfortunately, it was not feasible anymore for us to provide a free service for life. We hope Cerebus helped those users recover a lost or stolen device, and they will consider buying a license to continue to use our service. Paid licenses will continue on as expected. So this is a case of at one time they were one of the best games in town, and so they wanted lots of users, and now they're not, and they got to get paid. So I guess it's fair.
Yeah, I can understand. It's tough. I can understand. It's just it always kind of sucks when a company or developer or whatever makes a claim of something. I guess it's a cautionary tale, right? Really think about what it means to offer a lifetime anything, because what this could do is just kind of have, the reverse effect on them, which is make people kind of upset. But it was a free promotion. Whatever. You got 3 years out of it for free. So hopefully that was good enough for
and
you.
And more than likely, you're probably using Android Device Manager, so you've probably moved on. I mean, I don't know. It's like these kind of things. Like, I always feel bad for the developers who innovate and blaze a trail and then get replaced by official Google services. And then, you know, then it's up to them to either pivot or figure out what to do to make their value proposition better than Google. So,
sure.
Yeah.
All right, there we go. Before we jump into the arena, let's take a quick moment and thank the final sponsor of today's episode. That is PagerDuty. It's an operations performance platform that delivers visibility, actionable intelligence to help increase the uptime of your apps. If you're a developer or your servers, your websites, your databases, if you rely on your software and services to always be up, PagerDuty is an essential tool. Now, as the hub of your operations, PagerDuty connects all of your systems into one single view. That's so that you can see critical events across all of those monitoring tools that you use. There are over 100 ready-to-use integrations, New Relic, Keynote, AppDynamics, there's tons of them. Or you can roll your own with PagerDuty's APIs. When an incident occurs, PagerDuty actually notifies the right team, the right member, based upon all of those on-call schedules and personalized alerting preferences that you've plugged in there. If alerts are missed, PagerDuty will actually automatically escalate those issues to another member of your team until it's responded to. Now, dispatch alerts can be done by automated phone calls, SMS, email, as well as push notifications. It can resolve incidents on the go so you can live your life even when you're on call. And incidents are also automatically filtered. They're deduplicated to ensure only actionable alerts are delivered to the right people. And PagerDuty's analytics tools will also identify common problems, allowing you to proactively make system improvements and prevent future outages. Now, PagerDuty is relentless when it comes to reliability. It's fully distributed across multiple data centers and multiple hosting providers. And there are also many contact method providers per method, so you never miss an alert. And you can customize it to fit how you and your team work, regardless of location or size. PagerDuty is trusted by thousands of companies, companies you've heard of, including Microsoft, GitHub, Boeing, Nike, Pinterest, and Box. Get the right engineer on the right problem at the right time. That's what PagerDuty is all about. Visit PagerDuty.com/twit to sign up for a free 14-day trial. And for as little as $19 a month, you can increase the uptime, your uptime with PagerDuty. And when you sign up for a new account, you also get a free T-shirt. Show it off. That's PagerDuty.com/twit. And we thank PagerDuty for their continued support of All About Android and the Twit Network. All right. I know we've gone a little long, so let's get right into the arena and battle it out.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena!
Yeehaw! All right, I'm pretty sure I lost last week, and I'm pretty sure Ron won.
I did not expect to win last week. I thought Robin Hood was going to run with it.
I knew it was between those two. yeah. Genius is pretty awesome, though. Genius won with 36%. Robin Hood, second place at 31%. Motorsport Manager, third at 19%. Whew. And Piloteer in fourth. At 15%. Okay, so let's see here. So I'm doing an app. I'll try and speed this along because I know we're kind of running long at this point. This app is called Verb. And Verb is kind of cool. It's Verb apps and friends together. And what this is really good at, it's really good. The thing I like about it is that it's really good for local, for things in your vicinity, for doing things. You know, it tracks a lot of things. It tracks places, as you can see right here. So it uses your location to kind of pull back nearby restaurants, as you see in here. I love Central Market. I'll go ahead and tap in there. You get information from all these different sources. You can see here in this little card, Yelp and Foursquare is kind of surfacing the information there, so you get at a quick glance kind of how it's rated on those services. You get all the kind of information that you hope and expect from services like Foursquare to know, you know, how expensive is this place, where is it located, how can I get in touch with them, what are their hours, all that kind of stuff. You get a little map here, and you can get directions. You can also request a ride because the app also works with Uber and Lyft. There's all sorts of integrations into Verb, and that's what kind of makes it a powerful resource, particularly for dealing with local. So if you have those apps installed, you can request a ride, and it'll do that immediately from inside the app. I've got all of your reviews. You can do a reservation through OpenTable, again, done through the app. All of this is facilitated inside of Verb. And more actions down here, so you kind of see the integrations that are there right now, and you can kind of broaden out your search and everything like that. There's also these decks. I created a deck earlier on Petaluma, but it's also kind of a social experience in that, you know, your friends can be on here. You can chat with them through the app if you want to meet up somewhere. But you can also kind of create these decks. So these are three restaurants I really like in Petaluma. There's Cafe Zazzle, Mi Pueblo, El Centro, and Central Market Restaurant. One of my favorite spots. So you can kind of add these things so that other people, you know, that happen to follow you or whatever can find it and know what you like. And that's just kind of the restaurant aspect. You can place, you know, like I said, place your reservations and kind of do all that kind of stuff. Let me get back here to the main screen. And that's just places. You can track movies that are in the theater by searching or just kind of scanning through, again, integrations with Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb to do that, as well as watching trailers, all that kind of stuff. A TV show, track when it's on, Metacritic information here, IMDb as well, music. This appears to just kind of be popular songs. I personally don't really use this section because I don't think I'd find a whole lot for myself. Videos, which are kind of like trending videos, trending video clips and stuff, and events nearby. So again, it's using your kind of location to tell you that Mary Poppins is playing at the Spreckles Performing Arts Center in Roanoke Park. So, you know, you Mary Poppins fans, get out there. So it's a cool way to kind of take all of these things, allow you to navigate quickly to, you know, finding something to do or following something. And that can, again, can be done through your contacts, your connections that you have through the app, which I can kind of show. Oh, that's me. Hold on. Chad. Yeah, so I'm connected with some people through here. So it can be done through here, facilitated through that, and just kind of publishing it for the general public to see as well as kind of get to actionable information. Call them, reserve a spot, get an Uber or Lyft car, whatever it happens to be. It's just nice to have it all in one interface that's actually designed really well. If I don't care about some things, you know, you can just kind of swipe it away and. Just kind of a cool thing. So there it is. Verb, V-U-R-B. Check it out. Nexus Nick in chat. I know there's nothing wrong with Little Mary Poppins. I've seen that movie a million times. Partially because my kids love it. So there you go. It's Verb. Check it out for yourself. All right. And that's free. Miriam, what you got?
I got something exciting. Thanks to somebody in chat earlier who was super friendly and helped me find an app. I always have trouble finding apps because I'm... kind of terrible. Look at that. I got a fingerprint reader on this. Awesome. All right. Look. Oh, all about cables. There we go.
Here, so, I'll move it. Don't want any distractions.
So, no, leave it there. People can drool. No, look at it. Oh, yeah. Look at the USB-C. Okay. Anyway. So, it's called... What's that?
Turn the mic towards yourself.
Like that? There you go. All right. So, the app is called Equalizer Music Player Booster, and apparently it was one of the biggest apps of 2014 on the App Store. I had no idea.
I had no idea either.
Anyway, so what it is it's essentially a music player. I put a bunch of music here on my USB, on my built-in storage, and so it's just a music player like you'd normally expect, you know, but it has this really cool EQ, and then you can buy in-app additional features like a bass booster. They're very proud of this bass booster. Of course, I didn't buy it. So, and then there is a visualizer. Ooh, look at that. Funky, funky. And then there is, I don't know what this feature is. Oh, fade. You can set fade duration and a bunch of other audio parameters. But the fact that EQ is free is nice if you're into having EQ. There's a bunch of presets up here, as you can see. And then the other thing that I thought was cool about it is, they have all kind of nicely integrated, so you can see what other apps they've created. There's a lot of audio apps from this company. Check it out. I'll bring us to the store and you can see. So might be worth checking some of these out. And then what else is on here? Let's see. We've got, you know, pretty much a bunch of settings. You can see there's not too much. Oh, here's another thing that's cool about this. This app lets you share to another person that has the app on the same Wi-Fi network, I guess, your music, your entire music library. So you guys can be like, hey, listen to this, and then they can listen to it.
Is the file actually being transferred?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think it's just DNLA or DLNA or whatever it's called.
Got it.
But you know what? So at first I was like, yeah, okay, another music app. But first of all, the UI, I think, is really cool. It's really well done. Here, let's get to the actual play now. So, you know, it's just playing through the not-so-awesome speaker on the... But anyway, what I like the UI, and I also like that it has... I have, with this permissions around the Google Play Music thing, you know, you can only have 10 devices. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, you can't unauthorize more than, what is it, 5 a year?
I hate it, yep.
You know, because of that, and I review so many phones, I only give permission to use my Google Play service, Google Play Music service on like the phones I know I'm going to keep for quite a while. Mm-hmm. So when I initially want to test music on my phones, I usually rely on putting a bunch of music on the internal storage and actually like listening to it with some third-party music player of some kind.
Right.
And now typically with Samsung and LG, they have a music app built in and it's just fine. You know, I just use that. But like on this phone, for example, there's no music app. So if you look here, the only choice is play music. And so I'm always worried that by starting play music, you know, you can always, and I've done it already, you can always go and turn on the this setting here, the downloaded only setting to make sure it doesn't try to connect and start streaming music from your library.
It's risky though.
But I always find it risky and I'm always worried about it. So I'm excited that Equalizer Music Player Booster is basically a pretty decent music app with a nice EQ for free with a good UI. And if you want, you can unlock some additional features.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much the additional features cost. So let's have a look at a store so we can see. So it's $199 right now to get all this additional stuff right here. Look at it. So that's not bad, and it's free if you don't want to get any of this. So that's kind of my contribution, and I want to thank Tripod, I think it was, on the IRC for hinting this as an app and, you know, briefly just playing with it before the show. I just thought, like, I dig it. It's good.
Cool.
There you go.
Yeah. the name tells you all you need to know. Equalizer, music player, booster.
I know. Like it's that. Like, let's put everything in the name of
yes.
the app.
Hey. It works, apparently.
It has a cool little icon, though. See that? A slider and a rotator and LED meter? Makes me happy.
So there you go. So check that out, Equalizer Music Player Booster, or Boost. Oh, anyways. There we go. Kevin, I have your app installed. If you want to talk about it a little bit, I'll try and try my best to show it off here.
Okay. Remember live wallpapers, guys?
Yeah. Oh, those things.
Yeah. I remember how you could tap the screen and the leaves in the pond would float away and you thought, this is amazing. And then you realize that 26% of your battery life is going to those leaves in that pond. And you're like, this is no longer as amazing. Minimal Live Wallpaper is my app. It's Minima, like minimal without the L, but it's a great app because it's one of my favorite kinds of apps where there's a really shallow way of using it. And in that, it is amazing in that it replaces your wallpaper with, I'd say, kind of like a material design-ish background. For those of you at home doing audio only, I'm going to try my best here. It's like as if your cousin, you gave him a lot of really nicely colored cardboard paper, and your cousin was definitely going to art school. Amazingly well-made kind of, you know, stacks of paper textures. They add some linen colors to it, and they all just kind of combine together in a smart pattern with kind of nice or sometimes really jarring color interactions. And if you let Minima pick your background wallpaper, you can randomize it if you like, and it also has a parallax effect that you can turn on or off. So when you tilt your screen with the Minima paper installed, it's like the, you know, the iPhone. I have the more recent versions of iOS. Sorry. You can see, you know, kind of the wallpaper move a little bit behind the icons. I haven't noticed almost any battery effect at all. Lots of the reviews have noted that it's seemingly pretty good with wallpaper. And like I said at the top, if you want to really nerd out, if you want to change the shading, the transparency, the angles at which the different pieces can intersect with each other. If you just got fired from your full-time job and you have nothing to do but arrange wallpapers, this is the app for you, if you want. But also, like I said, you can just install it, use it to make your wallpapers more interesting and, you know, a little bit animated. And it's free for kind of like a lot of different wallpapers and some basic effects and settings. If you want to pay 99 cents for the pro version, you can unlock some other cool things like allowing it to create a still version of your animated wallpaper for your lock screen so that if you're neurotic like me, your lock screen can match your wallpaper. That's it. Minima Live Wallpaper. It's in the store. Like I said, it's free or 99 cents for the upgrade.
And you get a bunch of extra themes, pre-done themes if you upgrade to pro. So that's, yeah, like you said, it's 99 cents.
Psychedelic. So.
Just consider this a 99-cent app, and you get lots of stuff with it.
I'm gonna put this on my phone, Kevin, and take it to Burning Man, and like,
yeah, just show it to people.
You know, get those tripping people like all excited about. Mm-hmm. I'll never get my OnePlus 2 back after that.
Be like,
you can install. There's a what do we call? They're all widgets now, right? There's no longer shortcuts. You can install a shortcut that randomizes your wallpaper.
Oh,
so it constantly, cool. endlessly randomizes what's behind you.
You can with this app?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Or you can go into the app itself and set it to randomize every day, every, you know, right, couple hours, whatever you'd like.
Or randomize, change it up.
Every 5 minutes.
Nice. Very cool. Awesome. That is Minima Live Wallpaper. I have it wrong in the lower third, apparently. Minima Live Wallpaper. And it's free, or the pro upgrade for 99 cents. All right, Ron, you picked one off my list.
I did I really?
Dang you.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. Yeah. I didn't know. All right.
It's
well,
okay.
It's been a while since I found an app that made me go, you know, what is this? A little weird app. But this one kind of falls in the category of being more of an experiment than anything.
Totally.
It's called Inkspace. And it is a really cool little mini experiment app that uses the accelerometer in the phone and a 3D drawing space, kind of similar to that parallax kind of approach that the wallpaper that we just saw does. But it's really kind of cool. So there you can see when he loads up, it shows you the sample one. Up top, you've got a couple of options. You can change the thickness of the line you draw. And we're seeing here the output of Jason's phone. But what we don't see, and maybe we can pull back to the camera to show Jason using the app, is that he is tilting the phone and the accelerometer in the phone moves the image up, down, left, or right, and he's creating a 3D image, which is really kind of cool. Yeah. And so there's a couple of different options you can do. If you go back to the hamburger menu, what you can do is you can change the thickness of the line by using that kind of pinball flipper kind of icon, right? You can change how thick the line is. The lightning bolt line makes a line that is perpetually moving. So it's got some, you see it's doing that. So it you do, and it'll continue going in the path that you drew. It's kind of neat like that. You can use the trash can icon to erase it and start a new one, of course. But also what's neat is that you can, once you have a drawing that you like, you can then hit the camera icon in the upper left-hand corner and record your movements with the accelerometer, and it outputs it as a GIF that you can then send to somebody. So if you want to send somebody a lightly animated, very inky kind of line drawing 3D image, now you can do that. I don't know, you know, if someone out there has been waiting for that, but here's the GIF that I made for Jason with saying AAA with a little Android guy and nice. a little figure eight going on in the bottom there.
This was my try attempt. See, it turns into a AAA when you look at it at the side. Yeah. And then when you look at the front, it's an Android guy.
Yeah.
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 Kind of. It's hard to – I just want to – straight out.
It is challenging to actually draw what you want to draw, but
yeah,
it's actually also kind of fun doing it too. So
it's pretty cool,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very cool.
It's very different.
Great app from when you lose your job.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
one. Yeah, you'll just sit around all day and draw these things.
So I have no idea what motivated the developer to go ahead and make this or what the plans are for it in the future, but it's really kind of neat and a way of using the phone and the you know components within it, the accelerometer, to do something I've never seen before. So
yeah, absolutely. And this was on the Android experiments.
Oh, was it? Okay.
That thing from last week. I think we talked about it last week.
I saw that. This is one of the many things somehow.
Yeah, so cool.
Yeah.
So, so it's free in the Google Play Store. It is an experiment, but go check it out. It's kind of cool, and you can send weird 3D space GIFs to your friends that you drew. So,
yeah. Excellent. It's called Inkspace, and it is free. All right, so you can place your vote this week. Let us know which is your favorite app. Is it Verb? Is it Equalizer Music Player Booster? Is it Minima Live Wallpaper or Inkspace? Go to AAApoll.com/228 and let your place your vote. You can also go to the All About Android community page. It's pinned up at the top. You can place your vote there as well. And there are links so that you can click right through and download them and play with them for yourself. So far, a tie of Verb and Minima Live Wallpaper. Again, I spelled it minimal. Sorry about that. I'll have to change that. I don't know if I'll be able to change that on the poll, actually, but I can change it in the description.
They'll get it.
They'll understand. Just click the link. I gave you the link. That's the thing that you take action on. All right. So that is it for this week. I'm sorry we went over. So I want to let you guys go. Kevin Purdy is such a – it's awesome having you back on the show. We really got to do this again sometime sooner than a couple of years.
I think it was like one.
Was it? I feel like you know what? I think the last time you were on, I was not on. So I think maybe you filled in while I was out.
Possibly.
But It is great having you back. Tell people where they can kind of follow what you're up to, and if you have anything upcoming, this is a great opportunity to let people know.
Sure. If you love my bad Galaxy Note pen foreshadowing, or you hate my minimal live wallpaper recommendation, I'm at Kevin Purdy on Twitter. But more so, I'm on the Wirecutter, where you can follow along as I try to continually pick out the best smartwatch for Android phone users. And I'm also at the Sweet Home testing thermometers, cutting boards, all kinds of gear over there. So the Wirecutter and the Sweet Home .com.
Right on. That's so cool. Appreciate it. We'll have you back soon. Miriam Joar, what you up to other than Burning Man in a few days?
I'm going to the Playa for a bit. I'm coming back. Then I'm going to be very busy in September with some clients. And
busy's good.
But I'll be back for probably another Android show in a month or so, sure, whenever you want me. And then don't forget to catch me on Before You Buy. The last one was Friday. Of course, it's going to be a bit of a hiatus while I'm away. But I'll be back probably around I'll be on the 11th of September show, which is a Friday. Hopefully reviewing that little LG phone, which I actually meant to bring and kind of pretend was my main phone today, mm-hmm, just for fun.
Pretend.
Because like people would be like, what the hell is that? But anyway, you can find me online at tankgirl.com. That's my blog, but mostly on Twitter at TNKGRL. Think the comic book Remove the Vowels, and that's me. And my blog doesn't have too much. Every now and then I do a podcast. If you want more of me, you can watch a bunch of backlogs of my podcasts with some well-known guests from other tech publications. And, of course, sometimes some phone reviews when these are phones that somehow don't end up on Before You Buy. It hasn't happened. It's getting rarer and rarer for me.
Right.
And I have a backlog of phones now that I need to review, and they're kind of getting stale. I got an HTC HTC Eye. You remember that the phone from AT&T last year? Mm. Dual 13 megapixels front and back camera.
Oh, okay, yes.
AT&T phone. Uh-huh. I got it like a while back. I never reviewed it, and I felt really bad because now it's like 8 months old.
Oh, yeah, now
you know? So I don't know. But anyway, I wanted to say, as far as the T-shirt, should we give him the answer?
I don't know. It's up to you.
Well, you know, it's Nextbit. It's the logo for Nextbit. At least one of the logos for Nextbit. So... yeah, Nextbit's doing some cool stuff. I'm kind of curious to find out what they'll be up to, but I don't think we'll have to wait too much longer. So, it's exciting to me that an American company might be releasing a cool phone. I mean, normally they're all Chinese or, you know,
right.
This
is kind of taking the OnePlus model that we've seen OnePlus do, and
look at that! They've shown some more things. Where did you find this, Brian? Just at their website today?
Just at their website, yeah.
Oh wow!
And
they announced the date now officially.
They're letting the cat out of the bag. September 1st. More information on that.
So I'll be out in the desert trying to frantically connect to Wi-Fi with a OnePlus 2 to try to read the story. But I'll be back soon, guys.
All right. Thank you, Miriam. Appreciate it. Ron, what about you, New Yorker?
I'll be back in studio next week, so I'll be back in the Bay, so you can look forward to that. And in the meantime, you can go to about.me/RonXO, where you can find links to all my social media stuff, Twitter, Instagram, Google+, all that fun stuff. You can hear the nonsense as I root for the Mets in the last month of the baseball season. And exciting stuff coming in September. I will continue to tease you, but we will have stuff to announce after Labor Day, so it should be exciting.
Right on. Exciting
news for us, Jason, as well as me, as some of my own personal stuff. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
Can't wait to hear it.
Wow.
And spread news as well. Brian, what about you?
So when I'm not pushing buttons back here, I do a show called Know How with Padre every Thursday. And considering you and Ron, let's see, you both have about.me's. I actually just made one this
week. Yes.
I saw you added me as a Twitter friend. Which I thought was interesting.
I have an about.me as well. It's about.me/tankgirl, of course.
Yeah,
it works. Join the party,
nice,
Brian.
It's a nice hub on the web.
I love about.me.
Was kind of surprised Brian Burnett was still there. I guess it's not as popular as I had once thought. But anyway, I made one, so you can follow me there and all the other links and stuff. So I'm cool like Ron and Jason now.
There you go. Welcome to the club.
Is about.me cool?
I don't know.
I think it's cool.
I like it because it holds everything.
You know,
it's
like
easy.
That.
It's simple. Yeah. It's one page and just gets it done. Yeah.
I'm surprised how many people view my About Me page. Like,
really?
They send you the stats every week or whatever. You can ask them. And I'm actually probably getting more hits on that than on you know, some other things like my blog, which, well, my blog used to have a lot of hits in the early 2000s, but not anymore. There's so many blogs now. Mm. But it's interesting to me. What I get most hits on, I mean, other than my social media, is about me and LinkedIn. A lot. Like, I keep track of, you know, it's interesting.
Mm. I don't keep track of any of that. Yeah. Maybe I should keep track of things that don't relate
it's
to this show.
It's a vanity show. Thing. I'm just vain.
Well, speaking of, you can find me at about.me/JasonHowell. Follow my music at yellowgoldmusic.com. I have another Android show called Android App Arena. This week's episode is tomorrow. It's all about voice assistants. So we're doing Google Now. We're doing Cortana. We're doing, Hound? No, I'm not doing Alexa.
Does it not come as a separate app for Android yet?
No, it does not.
Weird.
If it did, I would consider it, but no. Anyways, that's at twit.tv/arena. That'll go live tomorrow. But that is it for this week. Always want to thank you for stopping by and emailing us. Let us know how you feel, even if you don't like some of the things we talk about. We're happy that you guys watch. 347-SHOW-AAA to leave us a voicemail. AAA at twit.tv to leave us an email or a video mail link. We're on Twitter at Android Show. We're on Reddit at twitaaa.reddit.com. We're on Google Plus. Just search for All About Android there. Show notes and past episodes at twit.tv/AAA, as well as episodes on YouTube and iTunes and all the places. And we're live every Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, you guys.